Okay, everyone. Hi there, my name is Jimmy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Jimmy.
Welcome to a pass through the program, a 10-box survey of various aspects of the AA program with a couple different formats designed to appeal to both AAs and Al-Anons, or indeed anyone using the 12 steps. We're ordinary members of the fellowship and we don't speak for AA or Al-Anon. We hope you find our experience helpful. The format of this session is as follows. Our three speakers will speak between us for about half an hour on a topic. As they are speaking, you are encouraged to write any questions you have on slips of paper. Paper and pens will be distributed. Our assistants, Alison and Alistair, will collect these during the meeting. We will then select questions and, if we can, address them by sharing our experience. The session will last 50 minutes in total. The session is being recorded. Recordings will be made available online over the next few days at a member's personal blog site, which is not affiliated with AA. The QR code and site address are available here on the front table. Let's start with a few moments silence of silent prayer to use as you wish. This session's topic is getting out of self, and Melissa is going to kick us off, followed by Tom and Jenny.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Melissa.
Good to be here. Good to be sober. My sobriety date is the 14th of May, 2010. Abandoning self. I was curious about the word abandon, so I Googled it. I tried to find out what people were using in terms of abandon, the definition in the 1930s, and it said, means to leave completely and finally, to forsake utterly, to give up or discontinue any further interest in something because of discouragement, wariness, distaste, etc. Which I can relate to because I was pretty sick of myself. And I still get sick of myself when I'm thinking about myself too much. Additionally, interestingly enough, it could be used in the sense of yielding oneself without restraint or moderation, typically conveying a sense of freedom or release. So when I'm abandoning myself, I'm not just hitting the ground running. I can abandon myself to something, which kind of fits because I was taught when I came in here, you know, we abandon ourselves to God, we abandon ourselves to something greater than ourselves. AA has a lot of paradoxes, and one is that I can give to someone else and actually end up with more. That's not something that I believed in when I came here. I thought it was kind of a zero-sum game where, you know, if I gave to someone else, I'm not getting as much. I have to look after myself. I have to get what I need in order to be okay. And if you had my life and if you had my circumstances, then you would do the same. That hasn't proven to be true. So abandoning self. Again, a kind of a dramatic statement, right? It's kind of like abandoning a ship, right? Ship's going down. You don't gently disembark. You get the hell away from it because you don't want to die. So when the book says abandon self, it conveys a certain amount of haste that's born out of necessity. It says yielding oneself can convey release in the definition. That's been my experience. I like to hang on to things, especially like things that can kill me. I have trouble differentiating the true from the false, as it says in our literature. I make plans in my head for myself and for others, and I forget about them until the plan is not materializing. and then I attempt to punish others and to put the plan back on track at all costs. I would literally be one of those people that's rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic as it is sinking. So abandoning self, so what's on offer, right? I get to live. I get free of something that's killing me. And in the process, I'm exposed to a program that offers me a better life. I used to think that that I had to abandon my life. This isn't what I want. I'm getting out of here. You know, I took some drastic actions. It didn't work. At some point, I was taught to abandon myself. And it says in the book, like, we abandon old ideas, right? When I started to do that, I received a life that I didn't have to run away from anymore. So abandoning self was abandoning what I thought was best. Now, here's what I did. None of it will sound particularly appealing. Daily spiritual practice, right? Service to others, continued inventory. It's not sexy, but it works. I get up at 6 a.m., but when I need to, I get up at 4:30 or 5. I do a nightly review. I ask myself those questions on page 86. You know, where was I selfish? Where was I resentful? Where was I dishonest? Where was I afraid? What that does is it keeps me from accumulating all this garbage that I'm carrying around with myself. It helps me to continue to be well. I have these questions on my iPhone notes. It's easy to access. It's pre-formatted. I do a 10th step when I need to. If I can't stop thinking about something, if I'm replaying it, if I'm speaking to people who aren't in the room, it's a pretty good sign that I need to do a 10th step. When I'm afraid and it's stopping me from being useful, I do a fear inventory, minus four columns, the fear, how it plays out in my fearful mind, what it would look like if I manage it with my self ideas, and then what it would look like if God managed it, which that column is very similar to what I would tell Sponsy to do. Both inventories, they're in my iPhone. It doesn't have to take long. I share it with somebody if I need to. I pray. I pray for others. I say to God something like, don't let me do this. We all know how that turns out, right? Can we cut to the part where I let you take over? To save a lot of time and heartache. My mind wanders when I try to pray, you know? I don't always seem to get, I don't always seem to connect, but that's not what's important. Sometimes I'm not feeling anything at all. What I do to sort of jar myself into a little bit of desperation is to say, what would it look like if I'm in charge? If I'm in charge, I'm gonna tell my husband that he's doing it wrong, right? I'm gonna forget how precious the time I have with my daughter is, how fast she's grown up. You know, I'm gonna wanna say no rather than yes to most questions I'm asked just because I can. And I say to God, don't let me do it. I can't do it without you. I'll mess it up. And that's how I abandon myself. It says in our book, Conscious Thought of Others and How We May Meet Their Needs. So what that looks like for me, I consciously think of anyone who comes to mind and I pray that they have whatever it is that I want. That I'm lacking at the moment, peace of mind if I'm afraid, right? Fun, adventure, new discoveries if I'm bored. The ability to manage tasks if I'm distracted. Just 2 minutes. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, so. If I've got a lot of things on my plate, I ask for people to have better time management. I know it's working when I begin to feel what I'm wishing that they would have, you know? And then I find myself smiling and relaxing and joyful. And I think by abandoning self is just me saying, this thing that I really want, like, give it to him, you know, let him have it. And I realized that, well, it works. I'm gonna just wrap up basically. One of the strategies sometimes I use if I'm about to think of myself is I put it in like an Amazon cart. I say, if you wanna do this selfish act or this selfish thought or you wanna tell somebody off right now, put it in the Amazon cart for 24 hours. They'll hold it for you. and I end up getting way more degrees of freedom because I don't do something where then my conscience is holding me hostage until I clean it up and make amends. And meanwhile, I'm not being very useful to other people. If I want something to end, if I don't want it to carry me and drag me, I put it in the Amazon cart, usually within 24 hours. I'm thinking, I'm really glad I didn't just go out and do that. I'm gonna wrap it up because I think I'm out of time, but it's great to be here, thank you.
Thanks, thanks, Melissa. Thank
you.
I'm Tom, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tom.
And first of all, Jimmy, thanks for asking. It is an honor and a privilege to do anything like this in AA, to speak at anything, to be asked to be of service anywhere, and that's not something that I think naturally, so I like to say it to remind myself. And thank you for the irony of this panel name as well. Just by asking me to speak at something, you know, I'm immediately moving directly into self as I start to think about how can I make this room full of people think I'm interesting and smart and clever and funny, you know? And so, you know, I had to snap out of that like straight away. And I speak in public quite a lot for work. And what I was taught when I came in by my sponsor and others was that in here, it's about being honest. It's about being me. And so I was told not to prepare anything ever. So I prepared on the tube between Bank and Monument and Tower Hill as a result today in order to sort of try and keep it from the heart as much as possible. And I only jotted stuff down because I sort of wanted to make sure I kind of stuck to 10 minutes and didn't get waved at with the 2 minute warning, but which I will do anyway. But like before I came to AA, I was always in self. I just didn't know it. And I got occasional hints of the solution to that. So I was aware that every now and then I'd do something interesting like Crisis at Christmas, or in my work world, I do a lot of sort of campaigning around things that I'm interested in, and I always felt better when I did that stuff. But I'd have never put two and two together and said that those are the times that I'm thinking about someone else, not about me. And if you'd have said to me, you know, that was the solution to my problems, I'd have said, no, that's not the solution. The solution to my problems is for things to go right for me, so that I can feel better about myself when I'm thinking about myself all the time. I come to AA and I start bumping into a load of weirdos in strange rooms, you know, who would say things to me like, if you want what we have, I'd be like, what is it you think you've got, mate? You're in a church hall on a Friday night, you know? But what they had, what I could see that they had, and it took me a while to see it, was that they had peace of mind. They had something there, and they told me that if I wanted that too, my ego needed to be smashed. The constant thought of others would bring me the relief that I sought from alcohol. They told me to call people newer than me, to ask how they are, because when I was thinking about those people, I couldn't possibly be thinking about myself at the same time. I could give it a good shot, but like it would, you know, by definition, be thinking about someone else and would be a relief, you know? And AA gives me a daily reprieve, just a daily reprieve. Every morning I need to reset. I need to, because I wake up, there was a guy at Hine Street, I spent a lot of time at Hine Street in my early days, still a home group there now, and I was a guy who used to say, I wake up at the crack of doom, and I absolutely loved that, because nothing more encapsulates the way I feel when I wake up in the morning, naturally. It doesn't matter what I've done, how sober I've been the day before, how much time I've spent in AA, I wake up in the morning the same every day, and the way I wake up is, it's raining outside, that's going to be miserable for me getting to work today, you know? My kids are screaming, that's going to be miserable for me, because I need to get up and sort that out, you know? I've got a big thing at work today, that's gonna be miserable for me because like it's gonna be a load of effort that I don't wanna like do. And so I've got a choice in the morning. I need to reset the way I think in order to get out of self as soon as I possibly can. I need to connect with my higher power immediately. And I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, so that's easier said than done. I've had to make a lot of changes in my life to accommodate that. And that means a very quick prayer and a very quick connection with my higher power first thing. Because if I don't do that, they're going to get the negative me as the first thing that they see in the day. And that's not fair on them, and it's not fair on my wife. That connection with my higher power leads automatically to gratitude, because I'm then in a place where I can see the positive things that are in my life. And gratitude leads to the willingness to think of others. And then I'm in a place then when I can think of others and have the sort of day that I can have if I want to, rather than the day that naturally comes to me. And I get to see things differently, you know? You know, when I sort of wake up and I think like that, I can instead think, you know, I get to go to a job I love today, even if it's in the rain. I get to take my kids to nursery today. I get to have a wonderful life and children that I can bring a bottle to in the morning to make their morning good as well. You know, that's the way I can reset that brain. I get to do all these things. And kids have been absolutely wonderful for getting out of self in a way, because, you know, I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. You can't really not attend to their needs for very long without it going to chaos. And so it automatically lends itself, you know, in my experience, to having to, there is someone in my day that I have to think about whether I like it or not. And that's been a real positive change. And I was very worried when I came in. I mean, typical self-centered thinking again. I was scared, you know, when we were expecting our first child. I was thinking, how's that going to affect my recovery? How's it going to affect my AA? Like, how am I going to get to do my meetings? How am I going to pray in the morning? And actually, you know, it's been fine. It's not just been fine. There's people in here who are able to tell me the way to do that, the way to handle those situations, the way to do life around this, you know, by putting this first thing in the morning and making sure then that they get the benefit of that too, they get to do those things. But I also need to check in throughout the day. You know, that reset in the morning is not going to stop me from being in self at the end of the day. You know, I woke up this morning and did those things. But there's a big election going on right now, which is very interesting to me from a personal and professional perspective. And I've spent a lot of the day on Twitter when I shouldn't have been, trying to find out swings in the West Midlands and things like that. And when I'm doing that, I'm back in self. I might not think I am. I might think I'm thinking about something else, but I'm not. I'm back in self. I'm absorbed in me and what's going on in my world, and not thinking about my children, my wife, and all those other people around me that need me to turn up for the day. And so as a result, I've had to throughout the day check myself on that, because it's very easy when there's something exciting going on to go back into my world, you know. Social media, Twitter in my case, you know, I know in the morning, yeah, if my first thing is I reach for that or my work email, I know I'm going into self. If I try and do that before I pray, then that's the sort of day I'm going to have, and it's already set up, and I'm going to have to do something about that later in order for it to get better. And in order to not be the big trigger for me as well in terms of getting self is the workplace. And my sponsor said to me when I came in, your job is to make your boss look good. What? But my job is to undermine my boss and make me look good. Yeah. So my job now, by doing that, and I understand now what he meant. What he meant is that when I'm thinking, how can I be of service to people around me at work, I'm not going, I don't get paid enough. Why am I being made to do that? That's not okay. You know, I'm not in self-pity. And I can't be in gratitude and self-pity at the same time. So as long as I'm thinking of others and thinking of gratitude, then I have a pretty good day and I stay out of self for the majority of it, you know? But it needs to, but it's a continuous kind of ongoing program of action in order to get there. And it works, you know? And none of that is, you know, stuff that I worked out for myself, because I'm not smart enough to do that. It's stuff that other people taught me, and in my experience, every bit of it has made my life better. So, just got my warning. I knew I would, but that's actually everything I need to say. So, thank you for asking me, Jimmy, and I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Tom.
Hi, my name's Jenny, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much, Jimmy, for... for asking me to do this today, and it's been really good listening to you guys talk about this topic. And I made a couple of notes as we've been through, just in case. I was just reflecting, you know, as you're sitting here, the sort of irony to me of me sitting here doing a panel about abandoning self, because I was quite a while in recovery running around very actively saying to people, I don't have a higher power, I need a higher power, I don't have one. How do you, you know, I couldn't understand it. And it was like people were asking me to see that the sky was green, and everyone else saw that the sky was green, but I couldn't see it was green. And I can't really describe it any other way. There was resistance, a lot of resistance that I can see, I know now. But a number of years into sobriety, the process of me starting the, you know, trusting a power greater than myself was my current sponsor. I was sponsoring a number of women at the time, and she said to me, are you capable and able of taking these women? This is not what I plan to say at all. Are you capable and able to take these women through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous at this time? And the answer was that I wasn't at all, because I was completely self-will run riot at that point in time. You know, people talk about, you know, I need to, it says, and funny enough, maybe that is why I've said this today, I wanted to read this bit of the book to you. It says, because it talks about abandoning yourself to God. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We read this every single Wednesday. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. This is so unbelievably relevant to me. I was at a point in my sobriety and my own house was absolutely not in order, and there was no God. I had a sponsor who took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was willing to have my experience of a higher power, an experience of a higher power. And that is a higher power that I seek to trust and rely on as I go about my life, and it has absolutely changed and continues to change my life. And most importantly, it means one day at a time I don't drink. I was thinking, as I was thinking about what to say to you guys about this, because I'm obviously no expert. all I can describe to you is my experience of, you know, what it means to me, what this means to me as I go about my life as a sober woman. What is abandoning myself to God, and what happens if I don't? And what does it look like if I don't? And I suppose I can see it in every single area of my life. I have so much to say about this because I found it so hard and so difficult to get my fingers around. And it feels so practical to me now. I would turn up into my workplace as a six-year-old frightened girl, and my boss is a family figure. And I would do that a lot of the time, and I would react as a child would in that scenario. I would have temper tantrums. I would walk out of rooms. I would slam phones down. I would be challenging. I would be cold. Many things in work meant many things about me. And I was reacting in these ways constantly, almost. And it was, as far as I could see, it was my boss. And how do I abandon myself to God? Well, what I had to do was go through the steps first and see what are the things that are blocking me off from a power greater than myself. What are the fears that are active in the way that I'm going about my life? And when I'm in that fear, the defects that will come out to play because I'm operating from a place of fear and I'm not operating from a place of love. So if I abandon myself to God, I can put it another way. I can abandon myself to love rather than abandoning myself to fear. Because if I abandon myself to fear, I'm going to act in a very particular way. And that operating system knows what it needs to do in that scenario, to my mind, to protect myself. Maybe once upon a time that way of working helped me. It doesn't anymore. It belongs with a young child. It doesn't, it's not, the actions of a woman in a professional environment. So for me, it's then about inventory. How am I going to then abandon myself to God? Well, I need to see what continues to block me off from God, from being useful, from being helpful, from being an adult in the workplace, from doing my work in the workplace. And when I first started working with my sponsor a number of years ago, I remember I said to her, I've done this thing to my, you know, with my boss, and I've said X, Y, and Z, and I need to apologize. She said, you have no idea what you need to apologize for. For me, I had to really understand why I was operating the way I was operating, because only from that place of awareness can I ask God, can I take a pause, can I take a moment and have a chance of doing things a different way. And my workplace has, you know, the lesson was sent. It was a very long, painful lesson with this particular boss that I had to learn. But I got there in the end, I was taking pauses. I wasn't reacting. I was responding. I was asking what the story I was telling myself about the situation was, rather than the reality of what the situation was. I was asking God to show me the truth, let me see the truth. And things started to shift. Slowly, things started to shift. And I have a different boss now in the same organization, in the same job. And I turn up most of the time as an adult. And now I get to abandon myself in different ways. So in my job, I have to provide critique about something, you know, they have a project, and then I'll have a look at it and see what went well, what's in there, what's not, what I expected to see. And I'll sit down in front of a group of people and tell them that. Now, I know from my step four, and just from me being in existence as a sober woman, I'm terrified of rejection. And sitting in a group of people and going, I found things that, you know, need to be addressed. If I rely on self, I'm terrified. I don't want to do it. Nothing's going to come to my mind. I'm trying to please people. That's not why I'm there. And actually, as I go into the meeting room, God, please help me to be of service. Please help me speak with clarity and relay the information. This is not about me. I sit down, I take a breath, and I speak and I trust. And that to me is abandoning myself. And that's a really like normal situation that loads of people have to do. They have to go into a meeting, they have to say things. Like, that's a big deal for me. Getting the words out and saying them with clarity and not being so clouded by fear that I'm not being of service anymore. So that's a situation that comes to mind. That's how I can abandon myself to God. Something that came to mind when I was thinking about this, again, it's really like simple scenario, but to me, it's the difference of operating from a place of fear, operating from a place of love. I'm terrified of rejection. My modus operandi would be like, I'm not even going to say hello to you, because what if you don't say hello back? Maybe you'll reject me. So now I'm not even going to, like, I don't want to, thanks so much. I'm not even going to, like, catch your eye. What if you don't look back? What if the eyesight that you're giving me is not nice and kind and I get rejection that way? And so if I go about my life in that way and I'm operating from a place of self, you walk past me and you don't say hello. And now I've reinforced my fear that you've rejected me, the world's rejected me, I'm a piece of shit, I'm not good enough. If, however, and you've walked past me and you definitely haven't said hello, if, however, I operate from a place of love and I say, hey, how are you? And you tell me you've had an awful day, you didn't even see me there, you've got all this stuff going on, my world becomes a totally different place to live in, because I approach something from a place of love rather than a place of fear. I've got one more. I'll say it really quickly. This is just so funny. Someone texted me last night and said, hey, Jen, it's Susie. And I, in my head, thought, oh, it's a newcomer. And I didn't save the number into my phone from a couple of weeks ago from this online meeting. So I saved it on my phone, Susie Frith Street, right? Because this is the online meeting. And then the next day, this morning, I'm on a Zoom with a sponsor, and I look down at my phone, and I haven't messaged this person back. I'm going to message them back. And I looked down my phone, and Susie Frith Street has started up a WhatsApp group called Susie's Lil Peeps. And I thought, I'm going to leave that WhatsApp group faster than you can say Susie's Lil Peeps, is what came into my head. And I thought, you're supposed to be doing step work with a sponsee here, not looking at your phone, carry on doing, like, be where you are. And I came off this Zoom And I go into Susie's little peeps. And I go to exit. And then I realise Susie is my 11-year-old niece who has just been given a mobile phone. And it's my niece who started up a WhatsApp group with my brothers and her mum and dad called Susie's Little Peeps. And I thought, I've never wanted to be part of a WhatsApp group more in my life. Oh, I don't know how that's relevant. I'm just going to leave that.
We're now going to move on to the question and answer portion of the panel. So I've got three questions here. Are there any more questions out? So the first question, how has your concept of abandonment changed since being in recovery? Anyone want to start?
Anyone want to take that one? How has your concept of abandonment changed since being in recovery?
I'll give it a go. It certainly has. My concept of abandonment has changed since I've started in recovery, and it continues to change because someone, do you know, someone gave me the answer from a meeting in there. She said something along the lines of, I feel this is relevant, I'm just going to say it. The closer that she becomes to God and the woman that she is supposed to be, I don't quite know how this is relevant, I'll just go with it. The closer that she becomes to the person that she is supposed to be and to this God-shaped woman, the narrower the path gets. And the more I am challenged to abandon myself in this world and in different ways, the more that I get to see myself as a child of God, I get to see how much more I can abandon myself in this world. I couldn't have, when I first sought to trust on a power greater than myself, have comprehended what that means to me now, because In the book, it talks about practice, continue. It's like if I picked up a violin and I tried to play it, I'm going to be, you know, it's not going to sound good, and it's going to be messy, and it's going to continue to be messy. And at some point, it starts to sound okay. That's the only way I can describe it. Like, I know this is going to sound like a really weird thing to say, and it's not relevant to being really useful, but it's, I told myself a story that I can't run. I told myself that story. And I then started doing couch to 5K. And I started doing park runs. And then I did a half marathon a few weeks ago. The story is not true. My concept changes the more I can let go of the stories that I tell myself and allow myself to be in this world and have an experience. And that's what I've got.
Yeah. I feel like I used to get away with it a lot more, you know, like not trusting my higher power, not abandoning. Like, I think in my early days, I could, and again, my life was very different then. So, you know, I could have a day when I was in self a bit and it didn't matter too much and so on. But that's kind of changed over time. And what I've had is repeated reminders that I don't know best. Like repeated reminders. I've got more evidence than I've ever got that I'm an idiot. Yeah. I'll give you an example of that. And actually, I'm almost exactly the same. I would have used this one otherwise, but the running thing, exactly the same. I was not someone who was able to do that. And I went through the same journey you did because I did it the way we do this. I said, if I do what they suggest, I should get the results. But mine is, So I live in Bermondsey, but I got sober in the West End, and I've always gone to AA in the West End. And apart from a few early meetings in South London, I've never really gone to meetings in South London. And a mate of mine came in 2 years ago, sort of fell in the door, you know, like ready for it. I've been waiting for him a long time to come here. And He said, I want to go to a meeting. And I was like, great, we're going to Hind Street Friday night. That's my home group, yeah. And he said, why are we going to town? Why don't we go to one near us? I said, I don't know anyone now, you know. So like, no, we go to town. West End's where it's at. And he said, I want to go local. I said, fine, we go to Bermondsey on Tuesday night, yeah. 2 years later, it's still my home group, my other home group. Because I got there and I realised that all the experience I had had a long, long, long time ago of being in South London AA when I was not sober were complete bollocks. And that the truth was that there was a, you know, I've got the home group there that is, you know, raw AA, newcomers coming in the door all the time. It's exactly where I need to be. But I would never have picked it by myself. And I only went there because someone else suggested it to me. And I realised that that's what I'd been looking for all along, you know. My best thinking gets me nowhere, and I've just had repeated reminders of that throughout the time I've been in AA.
Melissa, alcoholic. So I think with abandonment, it's the way the definition has changed is that I used to really cling on to things, and now it's I can let go of things. I can let go of my lack of reality, my perceptions. We had this letter that came in from school at one point, and they were like, you know, they have both of our addresses, but it was addressed to me, and it was like, you know, your daughter hasn't been in on time this many times, you know, we really need her to get on time, like, what's going on? And I was really annoyed, and I'm like, you know, why is this going to the mother? We're doing our best. You know, kind of F off type of a thing. These are the thoughts that are going on in my head. And I even started writing a letter back, you know. And then my husband said to me, you know, I said to him, oh, I started to draft a response. And he's like, oh, good, yeah. You probably just told them thanks for this. Our apologies. We'll work harder to get her to school on time in the future. Kind regards, Melissa. And I was like, yeah, that's what I said. And the beauty of that is he said to me something like, and then it's done, you know? And it was like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, these things will haunt me, you know? Because then I gotta wait for their response, and then I gotta come up with a clever response. Like, so abandoning things, yeah, I can abandon the right things, I can abandon the wrong things, move in a better direction.
Thanks, Melissa. Next question. What do you do when you can't concentrate because fears or grievances relentlessly intrude into your mind? Who wants to start? Who wants to have a stab at that one? You want to start, Jenny? Thanks.
Do you know the first thing that comes into my mind is my sponsor says if she has a thought more than three times, she's in obsession, which is quite a low threshold in the way that my brain works. So, anyway, if I have relentless fears and thoughts, I am in obsession. My understanding about obsession, it is a belief in a lie. So I'm in illusion, delusion, or one of the many descriptions of it. But when the question also talked about fear. Now, for me, what I have found really helpful in my recovery is inventorying a fear in the exact same way that I would inventory a resentment. Let's see what's going on here. Like, a resentment will take me out, absolutely, but my fears absolutely take me out. So I will inventory resentment in the same way. What is the fear? Why do I have that fear? Third column, fourth column. You know, where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, inconsiderate? And fears, looking at a fear in this way is very helpful because I have to be very clear about what's going on to be able to give that, talking it through with another alcoholic, and then give that fear to God. That is the thing that comes to my mind. It for me was a game changer, inventorying a fear in the same way that I would inventory a resentment. because that fourth column is so helpful to help me see that fear for what it is and then give that fear to God, having shared it with another alcoholic.
Yeah, I've got something comes to mind. About a year ago, I was out for a long run and I kind of mistimed it a bit and I had to walk home the last little bit because I'd done what I wanted to do and I'm walking along the road. It's about 10 at night and just along Old Kent Road and three guys come up to me and we have a minor, shall we say, incident involving them deciding that they'd like to own my mobile phone and my Garmin. I managed to get away, but I get home and I'm absolutely obsessed with what's just happened to me, you know? I feel it's justified resentment. I'm absolutely in fear. It's basically on the end of my road. I don't feel safe. Everything's going on, you know? And it's Saturday night. And, you know, my mind's going to get your bike chain, go find them, swing it a few times. I'm gonna lose that battle anyway. I'm not able to do that kind of thing. You know, I'm not really equipped for it, but it was, you know, that's where I've gone to. I've gone to revenge, I've gone to hate, I'm angry, and it's completely ruining Eurovision, which I've just popped home on WhatsApp with people trying to watch the results. And at that stage, I think to myself, you know, I've got Sunday with my children tomorrow, and this is what I was saying earlier about my kids being a good kind of boost to my motivation to put things right. Because I'm like, I can spend the day tomorrow telling everyone how hard done by I've been and how horrible that was and how I want to get them and, you know, like, and I'm running the scenario over and over again in my head, which is what I was doing, how I would have done it differently, you know, if only I'd have thought of this or that. And first of all, I've got to write down the resentment and figure out my part. I've got to figure out, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm having to think things like, in order to pray for them and to wish them well, I'm having to think, I don't know what their circumstances are. I don't know what led them to a point in life where they need my mobile phone on a Saturday night. And for all I know, if I was in that situation, I'd do the same. I have no evidence to the contrary. And that starts to chip away at it. And that night, praying and wishing them well again and again and speaking to people the next morning and trying to get rid of it, because that's the only, like, that's my choice the next day. Like, they can have that day or I can have that day. That's my choices. And I chose to have that day back. And I didn't do it perfectly and it was still there. And by the time I got to Friday night, Jimmy was probably there at the time. I was still kind of talking to people about it and trying to get it out. But, like, I have to take that action. It's, you know, it's up to me. It's not their day that's ruined. It's my day that's ruined. And so, yeah, prayer, step 10, speak to others and wish them well and try and understand the situation that's put them there in the first place, because it's not all about me.
Thanks, Tom. Mm-hmm. Do you have any strategies on
that? Yeah, usually, really quickly, I just go to, there's usually something I'm telling myself that's wrong about the situation. There's a misperception. There's a mistaken belief. So, and often it used to be, so it's always about the same. I think I tend to tell myself the same thing. So one is that if somebody else is acting a certain type of way that I would not prefer, that I can't be okay. Not true. That helps just to know that. Another one that has come up recently is that it's not supposed to be that way. It's not supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be different. And it's driving me crazy because I think it's supposed to be a different way. And I think there are probably things that I could do to make it differently. There are things I could change. I could control somebody. I could try to change them. I can manipulate. I create a whole different situation. But a lot of times I'm not supposed to do any of that, which is actually easier. And I can just accept the situation. That person is on their path, they're entitled to that path. I might think it's a spectacularly bad path, but my job is to be kind and loving.
Thanks, Melissa. We've got three more questions, so maybe in 5 minutes left, so maybe one per panelist. So how to handle abandoning self unknowingly? I always only seem to notice after it's done. So does anyone have experience on abandoning self unknowingly?
Yeah. Not in a good way though. Is this in a good way?
Maybe that sounds relevant.
Okay. When I abandon myself unknowingly, it's usually because I've abandoned myself to another person or something specific is coming to mind. Like I was in I have been in relation to, you know, another human being where I have abandoned myself. I have abandoned myself to that person. I've made them my higher power. And in fact, put that another way and take that person out of the equation, I can abandon myself unknowingly to my thinking. If I abandon myself to my thinking, I'm screwed. Actually, if I start to believe it, if I believe the stories I'm telling myself, if I listen to the thoughts that I don't know if I need to say too much more about it. Like if I unknowingly abandon myself to my thinking and I make my thinking my higher power, then my God is not my higher power. I was having a conversation with someone yesterday. They texted me and they said, did you say that there's no output from worry? And I was like, yeah. There's no output from worry. Worry is thinking. I'm thinking about something. Like I'm worried because I'm not going to enough meetings. Well, you go to more meetings and take action, or you don't go to more meetings and you deal with the consequences. Worrying about the fact that you know you're not going to enough meetings isn't going to do anything about you going to meetings. You know, or I was late for work the other day and I'm worried people are going to notice it. Well, I either set my alarm clock and get to work on time the next day, or I don't. Worrying about the fact that I've done it is not helpful. My thinking, can draw me away from my higher power. So I can absolutely unknowingly abandon myself. Was that the question?
That was it.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect. Second to last question. Is it ever legitimate to take time for yourself, e.g. for hobbies?
Yeah, I'll jump in on that one. Another story, I think. I've had a couple of operations over the last couple of years. It's not quite a hobby, but it's time to yourself, right? So I knew when I had my first hernia what recovery on it looked like, yeah? So on my second one, I was like, great, yeah? I get a few days just doing what I want, sitting around, watching TV. I never get to watch TV. Watching TV and just like completely me time, yeah? Now, despite having been through that before, what that led to was me time where I don't do any of the things I'm supposed to do. And then I end up feeling terrible. And before you know it, I'm sat on Zoom meetings and calling people and doing all the stuff I should be doing. Because me time has to involve the same stuff that we've talked about throughout this panel, you know? Me time can't be, I still need to be thinking of others. I still need to be connected to my higher power. I still need to be connected to AA in order to enjoy that time. And I have an illusion, I get it on holiday as well, that I've got some time off. And I never get time off from this. And so if I do these things, I can have hobbies and free time and so on, but within the boundaries of what is suggested here. Otherwise, it turns into less interesting time and less fun time than the rest of my life.
Thanks, Tom. Last question. Sometimes my AA way of thinking is not always with me. So how do I get out of self then?
So sometimes, yes, that's a problem. there are times that I realize that my first instinct, my go-to instinct, is not always what's the right thing. How can I be kind? How can I be loving? It tends to be good if I pack, you know, the first part of my day with some strong recovery, and it helps in the morning too if I ask God, can you just stay with me today, like Help me remember to stay close to you. Help me remember that's the solution. Sometimes I can foresee certain things happening. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes something comes out of nowhere and I react in a way that, I forget there's a solution. So, I think that it's a bell curve, right? So if I put in what's needed before you get to the top, chances are, you know, I'm gonna stay close to God. There is gonna be a point, and it's gonna be sooner than the point would be if I didn't reach out for help in the mornings and try to stay connected to God and try to stay connected to service. It's not something. I once said to someone, "What do you do when you're just about to kill someone?" And they said, "Nothing. That is the point of no return. You actually have to do stuff to look after yourself and others before that." So thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Okay, thank you, everyone. That's all the time we have, I'm afraid. There are 5 more sessions tomorrow from 1:30 to 6:30 p.m. The sessions tomorrow are We Will Know Peace, Forgiveness, Applying the Program to Relationships, Applying the Program to Work, and Service as a Way of Life. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, the courage to change things I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference.